you're just going to stand there eating that sushi all night? You haven't even looked at my photorealistic macaroni sculpture.
It's Who Arted with Creative Messiah, Amy Ralphini.
Well, hello, Amy.
Hi, Kiria.
How are you doing today?
Fantastic, thanks.
Very, very good. Outside's looking a bit grim.
I've brought my umbrella.
I left my umbrella at BFM yesterday, so I've come back to my umbrella. But
hey.
I'm glad that I have an umbrella. So I can
lucky it remained.
Stay a bit dry.
It was very heavy rain last night.
It was actually.
I was shocked.
We've got a very special guest in the studio.
We do. We have Don McGlashan in. Welcome, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for coming in. Got you in today mainly because it's New Zealand. It's at BFM, it's New Zealand Music Week, but it's also New Zealand Music Month. And you have a very interesting crossover, I feel, from your early musical work with From Scratch, which is currently got a show up at Te Uru Waitakere from Scratch into the Front Lawn. So I see you, although you have had very successful career as a musician, I see the artist, the born artist in the beginnings, and that previous song we just listened to is so rhythmic and percussion also in the way that it's pulled together. So I thought it would be good to get you in and have a chat about the transition between quite a percussive kind of background and then that movement into a more sort of commercially viable structure of song. So From Scratch, for those that don't know, was an experimental music performance group best known for their large sculptural invented instruments and rhythmic innovation. It began in 1974, ringled by Phil Dadson, and you joined in the late 70s and stayed until 1987.
Yeah, something like that. I was about 18 when I was asked to join, and I was a music student here at Auckland Uni. And I was studying the French horn, and I was also in bands. So I'd joined the Whiz Kids by that stage, and we had yet to turn into Blam Blam Blam.
Yeah.
And Phil Dadson and Wayne Laird got hold of me, and they needed somebody to. They needed really a drummer. It was a kind of a group of people with percussion skills, and people that were interested in. Music that had kind of like a scientific or mathematical basis, and I was really up for that. You know, I loved like multiple time signatures and overlaying one time signature with another, and I thought all my Christmases had come at once. And I also thought when I first started working with them, it's such a thoroughgoing philosophy from Scratch, because Philip had kind of developed it over many years and of his own musical thinking. And it, you know, as a youngster coming in, it took me ages to kind of get my head around it. My first, you know, few months, I was like, well, when do we get to just jam? When do we get to, you know, when do we get to just play drum solos? And there aren't any. Like, I mean, like nowadays in the current incarnation of From Scratch, there is some improvisation, like blocks of improvisation, but mainly it's a really wonderfully, deeply thought out sort of musical template that Philip kind of invented and evolved over the years. And it has to do with balance, and it has to do with rhythms gradually becoming more complex and then unpacking themselves, and then the idea of shared roles, the idea of equality of role, plus his wonderful kind of visual sense that you build a sculpture in space, and then you come and play it, and the building of it in the space is all part of the performance.
Yeah.
So it was a wonderful thing to be part of, and Philip really mentored me in the early stages. Not in the sense of sit at my feet, young man, and I will teach you things, but because he's not that kind of guy. But very much in the sense of me watching an artist who is—he's about 10 years older than me—and he just lives and breathes his work. He gets up, he does his art practice. You know, he filters the world through him, and it comes out as art.
Oh, I just love that.
I've always just sort of been so sort of thankful that I had that exposure to that guy and in that early stages, and we've been friends for years. So it's been a big help to me, I think.
Yeah, it's really it's so good when you get a good mentor that can really, like, you know, educate and guide you, especially with artistic.
Yeah, I mean, equal collaborations are wonderful too, and they don't come along very often.
Yeah.
But
a good mentor is kind of equal though, you know, they work with you and, you know.
Yep. But then with, it was fantastic. Blam 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 kind of took off, but with From Scratch, I'd been part of, I'd sort of learnt these existing pieces, like Drum Wheel, which is a piece that if you'd gone along to Te Uru a few months ago, they were performing that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I heard that was amazing. I didn't get to it.
And a piece called Outen, and Phil was already working on early sketches for Gung Ho 123D, mm-hmm. which is a big, long work, wonderful piece of work. But around then, you know, we started getting more gigs with Blam Blam Blam, so I kind of was less available, and I was like living in a van around the country. But then, when was it? 1982. From Scratch got an invite to go to the Paris Biennale.
Yep, Brad.
Phil sort of built a tour around that, and I came back into the band, back into the group, and we went to Paris and did this anti-nuclear testing piece that we'd written together, called Pacific 3210 Part 1, and we performed that in the Museum of Modern Art in Paris.
That would have just been unbelievably cool.
Yeah, it was great. It was really great.
For a young fella. Right?
Yeah.
Much of the Front Lawn music, especially tracks like the one we heard previous, bridge a gap between the rhythmic performance art and pop, which is so refreshing and so unique. Was moving from such an improvisational and explorative relationship with sound, well, I guess it wasn't too improvisational based on what you said, but, you know, from that different kind of construct of expression through sound into the structured hooks and tighter timelines for commercially viable music that's a bit more palatable for radio, was it difficult, and how did your audience change?
That's cool. I tend not to use the phrase commercially viable and me in the same sentence, because without the word not, or
I was thinking, like, you know, you have a chorus.
Yeah, you did right.
It's usually within 5 minutes long. Yeah. That's what I mean. And it's recorded.
Well, it was a cool time, and I don't get to sort of reflect on it very much. But I went to we performed with From Scratch in London, and we hooked up with Phil's earlier collaborators he was in the group which eventually went on to become the Scratch Orchestra, the London Scratch Orchestra. Mm. And so we met some of those people, and we went to some performances of stuff that they did, had a great time in London meeting all those people, did our month in Paris with the nuclear protest piece, went to New York, performed for quite a few people. Steve Reich came to the gig, and he invited us for a cup of tea, and we sort of sat down and had a talk to him, which was pretty wonderful. And then I ended up... flatting. I stayed on. The rest of From Scratch came back to New Zealand, but I stayed on and lived in New York for a year. And I ended up flatting with one of the pianists of Steve Reich's ensemble, a woman called Nurit Tillis. And I just sort of was immersed in that sort of experimental music end of things and performance art. I ended up auditioning for the Laura Dean Dancers and Musicians, which and I'd met some of them in New Zealand a few years before. And as part of that, I got sort of introduced to all these people doing cool music and performance art, and I ended up going to the 8-hour United States performance, Laurie Anderson's marathon show at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
I was going to ask if you met... Did you meet Laurie Anderson?
No. I was very shy. I didn't really meet anyone. Yeah. And I was sort of surrounded by that, and I was also going out to see all kinds of... I got really into Richard Hell and the Voidoids and that music and that kind of stuff that came just after the Velvets, or sort of contemporaneous with the Velvets. And a guy from Richard Hell's band called Jody Harris, I went along to a lot of their shows, and actually in the first Mutton Birds B-side was a Jody Harris and the Ray Beats song. Like raggedy surf punk song called "It Happened One Night."
Yeah.
So there's all that sort of grab bag of possibilities, but at the same time, at the same time, I shacked up with a woman who just played Irish, like old Irish folk music all the time, and together we just listened to all this amazing stuff. And so I came back to New Zealand after a year in New York with sort of too many groceries to make one dinner.
Yeah.
And I just was really confused for a while, and I just sort of staggered about, and we did a blam 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 reunion to pay debts for Simon Gregg, and then I co-wrote Don't Go, the anti-tour song with Chris Knox and Frank Stark, but I was kind of wandering around doing different things. And then when Harry Sinclair came back from his OE, we kind of realised that the front lawn couldn't be everything that we'd soaked up.
Yeah.
And so what we had to do was strip it down to bare bones. And so we ended up with this very minimal storytelling form with really minimal instrumentation for music. But you still can hear in it, you can hear all the things that we'd been doing, and I can hear me learning about folk songs and storytelling that way, like traditional forms.
Yeah.
And I can also hear us both, you know, sort of playing with the kind of performance arty stuff that we were soaking up.
You can totally hear, I can hear that in the music too. I think that's what resonates so strongly with me with it, is the storytelling is both colloquial, but it's also, it draws you in, and it's very traditional in a way. Where do you think the folk music comes through in some of that early stuff?
Oh, with Front Lawn? Oh, you can hear it in a song like Claude Rains, a storytelling song like Claude Rains.
I love that song.
You can hear it in Andy, really,
yes.
Full on in Andy.
Oh, I love that song too.
And just the idea of, I guess the idea of telling a basic human story, it's kind of, was sort of anti-pop music, because it wasn't about, you know, Baby, I'm going to love you all night long. It was really, really about the kinds of stories that we were trying to tell on stage. So we had one vehicle, which was to act out the stories and basically tell them.
Yeah.
And we had another vehicle, which was to sing a song about them. And sometimes we'd ram those two together, and they'd disagree with each other.
Yeah.
And we found that was kind of cool and interesting. But we really didn't know what we were doing. We were playing with all these things, and we were reading lots at that stage too. I mean, we were reading, you know, Grotowski and Dario Fo and Artaud, and, you know, I was thinking a lot about theatre, but we, when we got up on stage, it was a lot sort of less serious than the preparation had been. All of a sudden people laughed, and we thought, oh, well, this is cool, we'll go with that.
It's very, very connective, the lyrics and the way that, and the variations between your songs, it's just poetry, it's beautiful, it resonates. I was thrashing it in the 90s, and on late 90s, love it. We're going to play another song after this. Just keeping an eye on the time, because we are very tight with this. To conclude the exhibition From Scratch, 546 Moons, currently on at Te Uru, a special edition of Splash has been published, the launch of which is scheduled for this Saturday, the 26th of May, at 2 p.m. Now, Splash was a poetry and art magazine which appeared four times between 1984 and 1986. Splash 5 is the fifth issue of Splash magazine, which is intended to be published in 1987. I hear you have a strong presence in Splash publication. What have you contributed to this latest publication?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
But did you get interviewed in it?
Yes. Yeah. No. See, that's what the whole of that edition of Splash, which was put together by, among others, Winston Kurnow and Roger Horrocks, who, it was really cool. Like, when I was 16 and went to university, they were my American poetry teachers.
Yeah.
And they kind of got me into a lot of writing. They taught me about how to keep a journal and all that sort of stuff. So I'm very thankful to them. So they had this kind of under the radar, like, sort of kitchen table publishing type thing, which was really influential. It did two different magazines, and the Splash, that edition of Splash was supposed to be all about From Scratch, and it had interviews with Wayne and me and Phil, I think, and maybe Jeff.
Yeah.
And because Winston had done some interviews, which I thought it was for the listener, but a big chunk of it was for this Splash magazine. For some reason, it didn't ever come out. So my dear friends Frank Stark and Emma Bugden, who have this publishing company called Small Ball Press, have worked away to make this to sort of finish the unfinished publication, and it's going to come. It's going to there's a launch on Saturday at Te Uru, yep.
And then again on Sunday at the Auckland Art Fair, there will be a talk with Winston Curnow, Frank Stark, James McCarthy, and Andrew Clifford, and that'll be on at the Trish Clark Gallery booth, B7 at 11 a.m. this Sunday. Don McGlashan, thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me on Who Arted. It's just such an honour to have you on the show.
Cool, pleasure to be here.
For everyone else, From Scratch 546 Moons is finishing up this Sunday at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery. Go to teuru.org.nz for more info.
Wicked, thank you so much, Don.
Cool.
Ooh, I like this.
Trey chic.
Trey cool.
Touché.
Chin chin.
That was Who Arted with Amy Ralphini.